sure I've got everyone who's joined the call so far. I have Marilyn, Avery, Robin, Steve, David Maher, and Maria. Is there anyone that I'm missing on the call? Okay, so in the interest of actually making some progress today, let's go ahead and start. The agenda for today is to first discuss Marilyn's proposal. We'll try to do that similarly to the discussion of Aubrey's proposal from our last call. Once again, keeping in mind the main goal is to make sure that we just understand the proposal and then see if there are elements of it or the proposal helps us get closer to consensus as a task force. If we think it will help us get closer to consensus, then we may try to schedule some more time for it. Otherwise, the general strategy is for these other proposals, we'll take note of them. But if they're not helping us achieve consensus, we're not going to spend a huge amount of time on them. But in any case, Marilyn, why don't we turn it over to you if you could give us maybe a few minutes introduction to the proposal. And maybe I think Ross isn't on the call, but he sent an email expressing a little bit of confusion about what specific proposals were. But if you could highlight maybe the policy recommendations in
sure.
The end of the session.
Congratulations.
Oh, and there's Ross.
Maggie Mansarkia.
Hi, Maggie. Okay, go ahead, Marilyn.
Thanks. I'll just preface this by saying that I spent 5 weeks with governments over the end of the year last year, many of whom were at other international meetings, not at ICANN, but at ICANN as well. But many of the government representatives who were at these other events that I was at were also involved in the GAC. And in the course of having discussions with them about their concerns about who is services, there's really, I found, a wide range of concerns that do incorporate concerns about display of data and implications for privacy, but there were other questions being raised as well. I went back and reviewed the work that has been done previously, the public comments, the postings that have been done since I co-chaired the original Who Is Task Force, and that led me to author the original proposal that I posted. The original proposal has a number of other suggestions in it that I stripped out and did not include in what I'm going to review today. And I did that because I think some of those other some of those other recommended actions, I believe, are going to be more controversial. At least I thought so myself. And I wanted to focus on what I hoped could be some decisions that we could consider that might, as Jordan said, that might have the possibility of moving us closer to consensus. So that's the background. The proposal is neutral. It does not elaborate on the mission nor the core values. It doesn't take a position one way or the other, but it just tries to lay out three activities, I should say. And so the first is really focused on a change in the display method. And that change in the display method would, I believe, also change access to publicly displayed data. I did have a conversation with a couple of people from other constituencies about the idea, and the first recommendation we might consider to be on page 2, and that is item number 1, all who is access should be changed to web-based access with an image verification check of sufficient security strength so that we can eliminate or at least significantly curtail easy machine readability or harvesting of email addresses or mail addresses, since that has been an expressed concern over the life of the discussions about who is and whether people are harvesting using machine, using bots to engage in harvesting display data. The second recommendation something that was discussed at the end of the DNSO, who is task force, and that is, at the time, was not supported by the IP constituency or even the business constituency, and that is the idea of changing bulk access significantly and requiring any party who has access to bulk access to go through a accreditation or an attestation of who they are, what they're going to use the data for. And in the past, there's been a complaint that it's difficult for the registry or registrar to enforce any violations. And this part of the proposal suggests that there would be a whitelist. The qualifications to be on the whitelist would have to be developed, public comment taken on them, and an agreement signed that would allow ICANN to take enforcement action that could include such sanctions as significant fees for misuse or outright cancellation of the accreditation if there's a purposeful violation. So those are the two elements of suggested change related to access to publicly displayed data. The third recommendation is a broader recommendation, and that suggests that regardless of what's going on in the policy development arena, that it's time for ICANN to fund an extensive study that studies the characteristics of registrants in the non-sponsored TLDs, as well as the uses, abuses, and misuses of WHOIS data that are alleged to be occurring, and to make that study neutrally available to help to inform policy evaluation and policy making. So those are the three related but separate elements that that I put forward in this proposal. Items Roman numerals 4 and 5 are merely commentary that suggests that any changes that are system-wide do have to have an implementation evaluation, and discussion would have to include whether dual systems were going to coexist, what the cost implications are, and that I had not done such explorations on my for my proposal, but I don't believe those explorations have been done thoroughly on the other two proposals as well.
Thanks, Marilyn. So let me ask, first of all, if there are questions of clarification for Marilyn on the proposal, the three elements of the proposal highlighted here, or just generally about what she wrote.
Jordan, this is Steve. Is it?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think there's a lot in here that would be of interest to the IPC. One point I had is that I think the previous discussion about the whitelist was in the context of Port 43. There are now three methods of access: Port 43, web-based access, and bulk access. I remember a lot of discussion about this in the context of Port 43, but my understanding is this proposal would eliminate Port 43, at least for the most part, and would have would change the method of bulk access so that it's basically contracts administered by ICANN, or with ICANN playing some role in the contracts, and that's where the whitelist would come in.
Yes, Steve, and at the time, I was co-chair of the task force, and the discussion about a whitelist was particularly in access to Port 43. I think that actually we were discussing Port 43 and bulk access in a unified measure, but in this proposal, Port 43 basically goes away completely. Replaced by web-based access with a security with the requirement of an image verification check. I'm agnostic on what form of image verification check that registrars would want to implement. So there certainly is no judgment or detail included in this proposal that limits the choice of any registrar on that front.
Can I ask one clarifying? I think it's a clarifying question. In the security and the web access, would there be any recording of requester's identity?
That's interesting, Aubrey. You know, I think that's a detail that could be examined in the .name. The more elaborate form of this proposal did suggest that we could learn some lessons from what .name is doing and from what some of the ccTLDs are doing. I didn't take a position on that.
Okay, thank you.
You know, it's something that could be added if that's felt to be a something that's useful. I think it might add, however, Aubrey, some significant additional burden to the registrar. So I think that would need to be thought about in terms of its impact on the system overall.
Yeah, no, I certainly wasn't suggesting it, and as you suggested, you know, none of the I guess there's now four proposals have done the sort of implementation investigation that you've mentioned.
Right.
Although perhaps the OPOC has gone through more than any other. But that was just a stray comment.
Okay.
I have a question, Jordan.
Yeah, go ahead, Ron.
I'm just trying to understand how this relates to our terms of reference. I understand this proposal, if I understand Marilyn's clarification this morning correctly, this really specifies a method of public access or methods of public access. But I'm wondering what that has to do with the work of this task force.
I'm happy to respond to that, Ross. I didn't really understand your question, so I'm glad you're on the call and can ask it directly. This task force has among its challenges how to deal with non-displayed data if any data is non-displayed.
Yep.
And so the point there of if any data is non-displayed, the more data that is not displayed, the work of the task force, I think, remains very much open. So if we're moving into an environment where significant amounts of data is not going to be displayed, then the task force needs to figure out how it's going to undertake addressing how that data is accessed, who accesses it, what trail exists, et cetera, right?
Sure, yeah.
So
if I understand that correctly, you're proposing to eliminate whois and make it available through other means. Is that really what you're talking about as it relates to terms of reference number three?
I'm not proposing to eliminate whois. I'm proposing to, in the concept of whois, I'm proposing to change how the data is displayed and therefore accessed.
Well, one of the things that's not up for question for this task force is what public access means. So there's two methods of public access that are defined in our contracts. One is via the web. One is via port 43. You're saying that my understanding is that you're saying that port 43 should go away, but I'm wondering how that redefinition of public access has to do with the terms of reference for this task force.
But Ross,
maybe that's a question for Jordan. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I'm confused. I mean, if your view is we can't examine improvements because we attitudinally oppose examining improvements, I don't think that's productive.
So let me try to clarify here a little bit. I think looking at the terms of reference number three, the relevant section I think reads: determine what data collected should be available for public access in the context of the purpose of whois. Determine how to access data that is not available for public access. So I think Ross is probably right that there's no discussion there of how to access data that is publicly available, although I will go out on a little bit of a limb and say I think it's a little bit strange that that's the case, that we can define methods for access that for data that's not public but not for data that is public. So I think if there was a strong consensus in the task force that, that in terms of how the public data should be accessed, I think I wouldn't be opposed to having some discussion around that, once again, if it helps us get general consensus.
Yeah, I think that helps, Jordan. You know, I would also object to Marilyn's the rhetoric around my attitudinal objection to what she's describing.
No, I actually wasn't referring to you. I was referring to us as a task force.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, any other
questions? I'm still trying to figure out where this fits in, so I guess I'll leave further questions to.
Yeah, go ahead. Any other further questions for Marilyn?
David, do you want just questions or comments?
So at this particular moment, I'm hoping for just any final questions or clarification.
I'll wait then.
Okay, so it sounds like we may not have any more of those. So I will open the floor up for comments, specifically if people can comment whether they think there are useful elements here in terms of helping us get closer to general consensus, because that's, I think, the criteria under which we would need to have some further discussion. I think, Marilyn, that your last item, that having the study done by ICANN, I actually think that could probably be, if we think it's important, or if the council thinks it's important, that seems like something that could be requested sort of in parallel with our remaining work directly from council, and that probably doesn't fit within our terms of reference. Once again, if there was some strong support for it, I wouldn't have a problem including a reference to it at some point, but I'm not sure it requires a policy action in order to.
Right, Jordan, and I agree. I did not think it did require policy action, but I did thought it worth, I didn't want to circumvent the task force and just post it to the council without suggesting that the task force might have comments on it, which may be positive or negative.
Sure. Okay.
So David, I'd like to get in the queue.
Yeah. So David, anyone else with comments on this proposal?
This is Steve, if I could get in the queue.
Yeah.
Put me in the queue too, please, Ms. Aubrey.
Okay. I'm going to try to move on to access to data discussion about 10 minutes, so keep that in mind if you make your comments. But go ahead, David.
Two things. One is the proposal to limit access, I think, is a step in the right direction. The problem, however, it does not address the need for protection of personal privacy. The fundamental issue that faces this task force is the fact that individuals are required to disclose their home phone numbers and home addresses, and that is not addressed by this proposal. The other thing is, I think the proposal for a research study is a complete waste of time and is simply another stalling tactic to delay the outcome of this task force.
Jordan, can I comment on both of those? I thought I made this clear, but I do want to reiterate this. I did not, and I think if you'll go back to my comments, David, I did not suggest that the study needed to delay the work of the task force. I was suggesting that it really is time for a broader study. My own view is that ICANN will probably need to get into the business of having periodic studies on a number of issues done by independent parties that can help to inform policymaking, not limited to who is. So I'm glad to have the opportunity to clarify that. On the other point about not addressing privacy, I agree with you, and in fact, under Roman 1, number 2, I said that the proposed approach isn't intended to be a total answer to all questions. So I'm not in any way disagreeing with your view that this does not address privacy. I think I was intending to introduce this as augmentation to the discussions that are underway, not necessarily to replace the two proposals. I'm not saying you have to agree with me, but does that clarify?
It doesn't address my point that I still think the survey, the research study, would be a waste of time and a waste of money by ICANN.
You and I may differ on that. I was just explaining that I wasn't suggesting the task force stop its work while the study take place.
Okay.
Thanks, David. Steve?
Yeah, just very briefly, I think study as Marilyn describes it, probably would be useful. I think we've been discussing this in the absence of some of the data that would come out of this study. I wouldn't necessarily agree with everything, all the points that are in there about what should be the focus of the study, but I think a lot of that could be useful information that would help lead to better decision-making. I guess on part two, the two recommendations about web-based service in port 43 and bulk access, I think this is a promising approach. We have to look at how people now get access to WHOIS data and to what extent they're relying on tools that do rely on port 43. I think one result of this approach would be that there would be fewer, or at least different, free tools for getting access to WHOIS data, and there would be perhaps more of a paid access approach. Because as I see the difference between port 43 and bulk access, practically speaking, bulk access is paid for, and port 43 is free for the user. So those tools that rely on port 43 to put the end user in, to give the end user access to his data would go away. And instead, the entities that were on the white list and that would pay for bulk access would then be able to make value-added services available. So I just make that observation. I don't think that's necessarily a fatal flaw in the proposal, but I think it's just something that we would keep in mind if we looked at this further. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
It's probably worth noting that I think the current contracts allow, registrars already have the flexibility to prevent sort of automated access to even the port 43. So it could be that a lot of services. I think Aubrey was there.
Yeah. Okay. A couple points. First of all, sort of avoiding any, or perhaps not completely avoiding any of what might be my attitudinal issues with such a proposal. One concern I would have is the interaction of ICANN with national laws regarding how the access permission is granted and is limited. So, in other words, how ICANN would be setting itself up as an adjudicator of things that definitely have a strong interaction with various national laws. And, you know, wondering perhaps if we're talking about limiting this bulk access to just legitimate law enforcement or whether it's limited to those that have the funds or how that gets limited. And I know that was contained in a yet-to-be-done study. I certainly can support the elimination of port 43 access. I mean, and I certainly think that, you know, including that in the proposal certainly does make it easier to move forward to something that's discussable. I'd be interested in discussion of modifying the web-based access in terms of making it more secure, especially if it includes collecting the information of the person who makes the request and mandatory notification of the person who is being probed. So if we do decide that this information is available to people, well, then by the same token, the people should know when somebody is getting their information. And on the privacy study, I don't agree that it would be a waste of time or money, and would think that if we did such a study, that it would especially be useful if we barred all access until that study was complete, so that we don't sort of say, we're studying privacy issues, but in the meantime of the study, continue to work against privacy concerns.
Let me ask maybe a quick clarifying question for Marilyn, which is, so you mentioned in regards to bulk access that parties would have to go through some sort of accreditation or ethics process. What would testing to, or what would be ICANN's figure out whether or not they're worthy of access?
Yeah, you know, Jordan, in our last discussion, one of the things that got us a little created this barrier to our taking it very far as a discussion at the time was how to define who would get on the whitelist. We talked about the fact that a party would have to pay for the cost of the verification of who they were and what they intended to do, and that their uses of the data would be prescribed in a contractual agreement. So, you know, we didn't do as much examination of that as I think would need to be done, and that is, what are the, I'm going to put them in quotes, maybe double quotes, so everybody knows this is a code. What are the legitimate reasons that someone would get on the list? And I think it would need to come down to dealing with harms to the network, trademark infringements, things that are legitimately, and I'm not suggesting everybody on this call thinks they're legitimate, but things that can be defined but one of the benefits is that we would be eliminating the perceived and any actual easy harvesting of email addresses, of home addresses, of telephone numbers. But I think it would take a rapporteur's group or a thorough examination to determine what the qualifications are and what the purposes of the uses, what should be allowed as a part of the uses. Today, I think the guidance is no marketing by any means, which is an output of the earlier task force. But it does not specify any other limitations.
Right. So I guess you're saying that you would imagine there would be a change from, right now there's essentially a list of bad purposes that you're not allowed to use the data for, and I think there's only one bad purpose right now.
Right.
To a different system in which you would have a list of allowable purposes qualify under that list of allowable purposes.
Right. Which is a pretty significant change to try to reach agreement on.
I think I've Jordan, I was on mute. Could I get in the queue?
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Ralph.
I've got a better sense of this now, Marilyn. I wasn't quite sure where the meat of this was, and I was a little bit confused by your numbering. But as I understand it, you've got the three big points here. So help me. Thank you for helping me understand that. The question I have is what's, where does the new focus on bulk access come from? Because I understand and I agree with the move to web-based WHOIS, and I think that most registrars have done that, and I think that most registrars are using IVC in front of that, and I think that's a good thing, and I think I can support that. To a large extent, I think I can support reducing or removing the importance of port 43 in the current arrangements. There would need to be some exceptions made for transfers, of course, but beyond that, it has very limited utility. What I'm not understanding is why bulk access needs to be reopened when we've already got a contractual regime that really accomplishes 95% of what it needs to accomplish as far as managing that access to that data.
That's interesting. I'm not sure that's a shared perception by everyone. There's no concern about any abuse or misuse of the bulk access, I'm glad to hear that. I had, in my discussions, heard questions about whether there's too much flexibility in and no ability to enforce, or very limited ability to enforce violations of bulk access. Sorry?
I'd be interested in hearing more about that, because that runs counter to what the agreements actually say. There's a great deal of flexibility in there.
me.
and that's not me. George, you think, though, this thing, this is being supported by Verizon, so you should know Maria ought to be able to get an operator.
Yeah, Maria, can you get an operator and see if they can get rid of this terrible
thing? Sure.
Otherwise,
this is Steve. Could I just say a word about bulk access?
Yeah, go ahead.
What I'm told, and I don't have any first-hand knowledge of this, is that one concern is that bulk access is not really being offered by many registrars. So that may be, that's maybe an implementation and enforcement issue. But these people say the status quo is not like dealing with 95% of the issue.
But Steve, bulk access isn't something you would take Super Bowl ads out for either. Every registrar is obligated to offer those.
I understand that.
Offer that access.
But apparently this is not happening in many cases. But again, I don't have any first-hand knowledge of this, so.
Right. Like, you know, I can tell you point blank that I have no subscribers to my bulk WHOIS data. It's not always been the case. It probably will not always be that way. But currently we have no subscribers. I know of other large registrars that have one or two subscribers. So, you know, that's where the root of my question lies, is that I don't see a lot of demand for this facility today.
Uh-huh.
It's certainly something that we're offering. I have contracts that I can pull out of my drawer and execute at a moment's notice. But I don't, I just don't see a lot of demand or interest in that area. Therefore, my assumption that 95% of the issues have been dealt with.
Actually, Ross, you know, and maybe this is where, that's why it's good to have the chance to have this conversation, but let me do it quickly with Jordan. However, given that I am proposing to curtail port 43, I don't know if that's going to continue to be the case. So could we maybe take the assumption here that it would be important if port 43 is eliminated that the role of bulk access, hypothetically, I'm just proposing this, hypothetically may become more important?
Yeah, I think structurally speaking, that would be something we'd want to monitor through implementation to see if there's further adjustments needed to that other policy set. But,
okay.
But certainly, I think it's fair to say if you're imposing another set of regulations that they will have some effect, and that we want to know what those effects are and react to them within a timely and effective manner.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to try to wrap up discussion on this topic. I think if people do have further thoughts, especially with regards to, I heard some support for some of these items, so it may be worth some further discussion, primarily on the list, to see if there are elements here that that would make sense to incorporate into our ongoing sessions. So I've certainly encouraged some further discussion on the list, and if we see that heating up in a useful way, and we may try to get some time on a further call as well, with the caveat that we do have quite a bit to do and a whole lot of calls remaining. So with that in mind, I'm actually going to turn our attention to one of the items that we have. Oh, no.
Marie, did you reach the operator before?
Yes, I did. I'll get back to them again.
Well, it's me.
Okay.
Yeah, if you hear that happen a lot again, it may be worth trying to get in touch with them again. But,
okay.
Okay, great. So I want to turn our attention to the access to data session. This is a fairly critical area for us to resolve one of our terms of reference items, and we haven't yet gotten a lot of traction on it. I'm hoping we can have some useful discussion today. I think previously we'd have a brief discussion and essentially identified a bunch of areas where sort of possible ideas existed. But we haven't really done a lot about trying to figure out which of these might be preferred by various task force representatives or what levels of support they have. I sent out an email just a little while ago after the call started, actually, just excerpting from the preliminary report what those suggestions were. And I'll just very briefly highlight them again. People don't have access to email at the moment and gotten what they are. And then I'm hoping that we can have a discussion around whether or not any of these are particularly useful in helping us move forward on this particular terms of reference item. So the five sort of items under, that have been proposed so far are, number one, the registrars have proposed essentially that data could be made available through the by making a request of the registrar. It's not published in the WHOIS, and I believe that that they believe that essentially mirrors the status quo. It makes quite similar to this today, and I think Ross has indicated in the past that if this were going to become a preferred outcome, that some thought could also go into trying to put together some best practices on this particular point. The second concept is a UDRP mechanism, which is, and I think this is not probably sufficient to answer the question, but maybe an important part of the overall answer, which is that in some cases, if data is removed, it may make it impossible to file a UDRP complaint, especially the way the UDRP is written now. And so some mechanism would have to be introduced to allow to sort of either modify the UDRP or have some request process to allow the data to be produced as part of a UDRP complaint or some other way of having the UDRP function in the absence of this data. The third proposal was something I proposed, which is that if you had removed, if there's data that's been removed from the WHOIS, and either the reason that data was removed is no longer valid, and that assumes that there's some opt-out with criteria place, or as a more general case, if the domain is being used illegally or to harm the security or the stability of other internet resources, then the information could be made available. And I propose that some third party would evaluate the request or decide some sort of mutual arbiter of whether or not the there was some bad behavior actually going on. The fourth proposal was, I think the IPC suggested that actually sort of adopting a proposal that I had made with regards to tiered, sort of with regards to tiered access, which is essentially that anyone willing to enter into a contract saying they won't use the information for bad purposes could get access to the data. So it wouldn't be available to the public generally, but there would be a fairly low bar for who could get access to the data. And then the fifth option, I think that, once again, this is probably just a supplement to some other discussion, and then I think Wendy had proposed this, which is saying that instead of having the data corrected or revealed, that a registrar could opt to just have the domain deleted. If you got to a situation in which it was appropriate to reveal the information, the person could say, I don't want my information revealed, just go ahead and delete the domain instead. So that's the discussion we've had so far. Let me first ask if we've had some time to think about this and have some further discussion. So I'm wondering, first of all, if people have any other suggestions, or are there other proposals that we haven't captured yet? Okay, I'm hearing no. So this is seems like this is probably then the entire universe of
Jordan, it's Marilyn. I need for you to do number one again, please. I didn't.
Number one is essentially if you need access to data that's not published in WHOIS, then you ask the registrar for that data.
Oh.
Is that the correct summary, Ross?
Yep.
Yeah.
But there was no criteria about what the procedures, the process was. Is that right?
Yeah, so I'll ask Ross to speak to this.
I just wanted to be sure I captured them. I wasn't trying to change your order in discussing them.
Yeah, well, no, I think it's fine to get into a little bit more detail.
Sure, okay.
So Ross, do you want to go ahead and answer that?
My mouth is full.
I'll try real quick. I think the answer to that is no, there's no policy criteria, but Ross is
Sorry. I don't mind filling in, Jordan. I just had to finish too. I believe I circulated earlier a walkthrough of what that which is essentially each registrar would appoint, if they haven't done so already, a point of contact that would handle these inquiries. These inquiries could come through telephone, postal, email, the way they do today. And then they would get dealt with basically on a first-come, first-served basis. First-come, first-serve is a little bit... typically, they get dealt with first-come, first-serve, but it's certainly the case where higher priority inquiries would get primary treatment over secondary inquiries. For instance, law enforcement agency looking to get data on a child porn case would probably take precedence over... a more standard run-of-the-mill trademark question. Those types of race conditions don't happen all that often, so I'm not sure it's much of a concern. But then typically those requests are evaluated based on, I think there's probably a fancy legal forward, but basically on their face, the facts at hand, the current situation, any laws that may be coming into play, any liability that may come into play. The decision gets made as to what data gets released, when it gets released, and how it gets released. Typically, there'll be follow-up questions which will get dealt with in a very similar manner.
Are you taking clarifying questions now, Jordan, or do you want
to... Yeah, so I think that's probably a good way to start, is if people do have further clarifying questions on any of these...
Better question would be, did I take another bite of my sandwich?
I mean, maybe you should wait until we're through the clarifying
questions. I will.
But if people have clarifying questions, fine. So Marilyn, does anyone else have any clarifying questions? So Marilyn, the stage is yours.
Today, Ross, many of the requests for information, the percentage of requests that are answered by public access to who is versus those that have to go to the registrar, I don't have a good handle on it. I'm not sure any of us do. But we know, I think, based on what your proposal outlines and from conversations with registrars, that a certain number of requests do come to the registrar. I'm just not sure that I understand and wondered if you had any estimate on what impact on the number of requests access, public access were closed.
To rephrase the question, make sure I understand it. Are you asking how many queries do we currently get today that are not, how many queries today we get outside of the public access we provide through WHOIS?
How
many do we fulfill manually?
That would be an interesting question to ask as well. I ask if you, you might go on from that to say, do you have an estimate for what percentage of growth would be, or increase would be anticipated if public access were closed?
I see. At least in terms of the OPOD proposal, I don't change all that much, actually. Typically, the type of inquiry that we see for this type of data relates to some sort of investigation. It can be from law enforcement that they're looking at both data sets, both that which is published publicly and that which is published privately. So typically, when there is an investigation, at least anyone of any seriousness, we're going to see a manual request come through. So I don't necessarily see much of a, if any, change in the volume at all. In terms of absolute numbers, to give you a sense, two cows, we handle roughly 4 million registrations. We may receive two or three of these a day, and that would be from kind of all comers. So that would include the intellectual property type queries as well as law enforcement queries and just regular, I want to buy this domain, can you tell me who owns it, that kind of stuff.
This is Steve. Could I get in the queue, please?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm going to ask another clarifying question. I'll wait until after.
So I would just follow up and say that I think the question that was posed to Ross is probably difficult for him to answer because he doesn't know how many issues are now resolved by somebody going to the WHOIS data and going from there without having to involve the registrar.
Right.
And while I'm sure that he's right that there are some cases where you're not going, you know, that's not going to happen. I think that's kind of an unknowable number at this point, and certainly anecdotally, I would think that.
Well, the question I answered, though, Steve, was not at a general basis, but as it relates to law enforcement interests.
Okay,
on,
all right.
Based on the feedback that they've given us over time.
Oh, thank you for clarifying that. Sorry, thank you. I meant for my question to be broader than that, so this is helpful. So your answer is limited to the request for private information that come from law enforcement?
Absolutely. I have no, and typically the data request, we don't get data requests from trademark attorneys typically because they're using Whois for that data.
Okay.
They would use port 43, or they would use web-based Whois for that.
So, Ross, maybe to rephrase Marilyn's original question, do you think that you would see some additional requests as a result of whatever trademark attorneys or other types of people that are using port 43 today that might make requests to the registrar directly in the future?
I think Steve's right. I think it's an unknowable answer. I can give you my guess, but I can't say definitively it will increase or decrease by 2.4% or anything like that. No. I see it remaining roughly flat. But that then goes to the heart of one of the more contentious aspects of the proposal, which is will the intellectual property community be able to get the data that they need out of the new data set? I say yes. Steve says no. So, you know, if Steve's right, then that means I'm going to see a lot more manual requests. If I'm right, then I'm going to see roughly the same I see today.
Great. So is that does that answer your question, Steve?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, so I wanted to ask maybe not Ross, but maybe David, if registries sometimes see requests like this as well.
Could you repeat the question?
Do registries sometimes get sort of out-of-band requests, especially thick registries, I guess, for data that's not published in the Whois? But I guess, do you have data that's that you would be useful to law enforcement or attorneys or anything?
I mean, we're a thick registry, and so far as I know, I mean, we get odd bits of correspondence about people who don't like particular websites and so on, or disputes, transfers, and that kind of thing. But I can't recall any particular request for who is that. I have asked Pam Miller to let me know. I believe we do have some bulk access agreements, but maybe Pam responded to my email. Oh, go ahead.
So it does seem like most of the action would be in the registrar. Okay. So if there's no other clarifying questions on Ross's or any of the proposals, I'm going to suggest a couple of things that we might do. The first is, it seems like the item number two, which is the UDRP mechanism, probably deserves some further attention, almost regardless of whether we choose special circumstances or OPOC, just to make sure that we're understanding what the implications on other ICANN policies, particularly UDRP, might be of adopting these changes, and if any, to the extent like special circumstances, if it removes a whole record and it's no longer possible to file UDRP as a result, we would need to have presumably some sort of mechanism to be able to file the UDRP in the future. And similarly, if there's no longer enough data, I'm not familiar enough with UDRP to talk to this very intelligently, but if there's not enough data in the registrant record with the OPOC proposal, then it might be necessary for some tweaks to be made to either the UDRP probably, or some parallel process for getting access to the data, those cases. That probably deserves some isolated work in and of itself.
Wouldn't that be something that we would pick up during implementation? Typically, we've had some sort of a legal review of the policy proposal that then fleshes out what the broader implications are across the board. So I,
you know, I would think that unless there's some obvious ones, you know, i.e. we wouldn't want to stick our head in the sand, but we could probably catch a broader range of issues if we actually, you know, get staff engaged and
Sure, no, that makes sense. So it might make sense just to include, you know, we could say this, you know, this is not intended to break the UDRP and some further, you know, work. An implementation review should review how to make sure this is compatible with UDRP or something.
Yeah, that might be just something that needs to be flagged, and then the implementation process could examine implications.
Yeah,
this is Steve. I would agree with that, and I think this really underscores a point that is going to kind of affect all of these options, which is, you know, let's face it, some of these options, our attitudes toward them are going to depend on how much data is taken out of public access. And if it's only a little, then the impact may be much less, and maybe easier to have a scalable solution, one of these options or some combination of these options, frankly, for dealing with access in those situations. On the other hand, if a lot of data or data on virtually all registrations is being removed from public access, then I think it's a harder problem to figure out a good, efficient, balanced mechanism for giving the people access to that data. I think it's just that's just a part of the context that affects all of these.
Right. Okay. Great. So I think probably we can leave a placeholder here, which will just be that we'll flag this as an issue for review and implementation. So then at this point, I think there's really three. Other than number two, which is the UDRP mechanism, and number five, which is really an if data is going to be revealed, adding another option, I think there's really three options on the table at this point with regards to providing access to data. That's number one, which is the proposal that we've been discussing of Ross's, which is to contact the registrar and ask them for the data. Number three in the original list, which was the mechanism that essentially, if you're doing something bad with your domain, there's some third party that evaluates requests. Some third party that evaluates that will take requests and evaluate whether or not you're actually using it for a bad purpose and reveal the information if so. And then number four, which is that anyone that signs a contract agreeing that they are not going to use the information for a bad purpose would get access to the data. So I wonder maybe if it would be useful to have some discussion, get a sense of people's support or have comments on the comparison of those key options.
Well, Jordan, this is Steve again. As I mentioned, I think you could also think about a combination of some of these approaches. For example, if you had best practices for how registrars should deal with this, with these requests, that could incorporate some element of three. Certain requests would go to a third party, or three could be a backup in case a registrar didn't follow the best practices, since I assume the best practices would be kind of non-binding and some registrars might not follow them. It could also be part of the best practices that you'd have kind of a whitelist situation, like in 4, where certain requesters would kind of be pre-cleared to have access to this data. I mean, it all could be, you could in some way combine all three of those approaches. So I'm not sure that taking a straw poll or getting an indication of support about 1, 3, or 4 in isolation might.
Yeah, so I guess So I'm certainly open to people saying, oh, I'd like to find two of them, something like that, get a sense of, like, some comments on judgment about these are the options that we see. What seems like a reasonable approach to various representatives is moving forward on this axis. Your comments actually made me think of a question I'd like to pose to Ross, which is, so Ross, if there were some best practices with regards to the proposal to have registrars provide the data, what would there be any recourse if registrars didn't obey those best practices?
Well, you know, I don't... So it would there be implications within ICANN's reach? I would say no. Would there be implications within the reach of law enforcement officials, et cetera, et cetera? You know, that's what this proposal is trying to really respect, which is that, you know, law enforcement is law enforcement and then government is government. When those types of people ask those types of questions, private operators have an obligation to respond in some way, shape, or form based on their place in the world. You know, my relationship with the FBI is a good example. Really depends on a whole bunch of things. You know, for instance, how much business do we do in the United States, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Whether we do business there at all, whether I ever want to go back there, et cetera, et cetera. I'm very inclined to be cooperative with the Federal Bureau of Investigation for a lot of reasons. And it, no matter what the best practices say, you know, I have very, very deep requirements to play along with those people. You know, I don't have a similar obligation to how would I characterize this politely, to other, you know, lesser established law enforcement agencies, let's say. I'm more inclined to ask them to work through the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. You know, so beyond best practices, I think writing in some of these things within the contracts or creating policy around them creates an almost unmanageable set of obligations that, in other words, the matrix is just a little bit too large to be enforceable, I think, and we would end up with a lot more loopholes than we would actually end up with results. So the answer is, the short answer is no.
Okay, thanks. So...
Jordan, I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
When we use the term best practice, then, Ross, the way you're using it is in a very flexible, that would be voluntary for people to subscribe to it?
Absolutely, yeah. Basically rooted in the recognition that 99% of the registrations are already covered by this type of a program, i.e. GoDaddy has people that deal with these types of inquiries, Tucows does, Melbourne IT does, Network Solutions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You get to it right down to it. There's a very small percentage of registrations that wouldn't be covered by what's currently going on. So how best to get those players on board is to help teach them actually what an effective compliance and what an effective contract enforcement, what you know, how to effectively relate to law enforcement inquiries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when I say compliance, I mean from a registrar to registrant perspective, not from an ICANN to registrar perspective.
Okay, so I will go back to my previous question, which is if people. Encouraging, you know, if people have comments with regards to support for any or various combinations of approaches, I think it would be helpful to get a sense of...
Bradley, can I get in the queue?
Yeah, Avery, anyone else? Avery, why don't you see if you can start some discussion here.
Okay. In general, I tend to support the idea of the first one. Although I must admit, and this may sound like a rare thing, I tend to agree with Steve in one respect, that it depends on what other rules are put in, how I feel about other things. For example, if too much information is still included in the publicly accessible who is, then certainly I would look to, you know, Proposal 5, where someone would definitely have the ability to say, no, you know, no more information can be given. But I tend to think that leaving it with the registrars and their, you know, dealings with the local law enforcement and with perhaps any foreign law enforcement that they feel bound by. And of course, they have national laws that could very well tell them, you know, I don't care how much you like the FBI, we don't want you to give it to them. And then they wouldn't. So, that it still really does remain government.
recovery. Any other...
Actually, I think I would like to maybe have asked Steve if he's prepared to do that, to talk a little bit more about number four.
Well, as Jordan said, this is kind of borrowed from one of his other proposals, but basically you could have some form of contractual agreement about how you would use the data.
Mm-hmm.
That could be either done, I suppose, on an ad hoc basis, or it probably would be more efficient to do it on a pre-qualified basis, that you would sign up. Let's assume that you sign up with the registrar, and hopefully this could be done on a uniform basis, and so you wouldn't have to have separate agreements with every single registrar, that would say that when I ask for data that's not made public, you will give it to me under these circumstances, and I will take only the following uses of it, or I will refrain from the following uses of it.
So, Steve, it would be something like, let's say that the AT&T enforcement team signed up for access to who is across, and wanted to sign up for that access across all of the registered registrars, and their concerns are network attacks, service attacks, phishing, farming. They identify those in a document, and then they would be given a password or a...
They either were given a password or a credential of some kind that they would then take to the, let's assume for purposes of argument that the domain name was registered with 2Cows, and they would go to 2Cows and say, okay, we've entered into this agreement with, this third party that runs the contracting process, whether that's ICANN or some agent of ICANN or something.
Uh-huh.
And here's our credential, our token that shows that we've entered into the agreement and which we've pledged we'll only use it for those five purposes. Now give us the data. And then presumably if there would be some recourse in that circumstance if there were problems in obtaining the data, because that would be, presumably this would be incorporated into the accreditation process.
Do you, and Jordan, you may have thoughts on this as well, when the earlier task force thought about something like this, they did assume that there would be a cost to, that there would be an additional cost to providing this. Did your consideration of this include how the registrar might be able to do cost recovery?
Meryl, I'll tell you my thoughts on that real quick, which is, so I actually imagine this can be implemented relatively, I think the most of the cost would be in the contracting sort of verification.
Right, okay.
So I think what I proposed earlier as a way of simplifying that process was that there would be, as you point out, like some central contracting authority, so you don't have to replicate that process over however many registrars.
Okay.
And that entity... then I actually think it would be good to probably, simple from a technical implementation, it might be good to have that entity just have like some sort of proxy or something like that to all of the back-end registrars. Although another proposal that's been discussed that would probably be feasible as well technically would be to issue something like a digital certificate or something that the various registrars would recognize. I think that might actually introduce some new costs to registrars, but it's worth some discussion in either case. But
Jordan, help me understand a little bit better. What data specifically are we talking about here?
We're talking about the data that would be removed from the who is under whatever OPOC or the special circumstance. Another thing that we agree upon.
Billing contact?
It wouldn't include any data that's not published in the who is today. So billing contact, it wouldn't include the billing contact.
So billing contact is published in some registries?
In the GTLD registries?
Yeah.
Well, but
some
registrars,
TLDs. It's registry, so.
I don't think like .org, so that's .org.
I agree.
I don't think that, right?
There are some where that is.
So, okay, well, in any case, any data that's published today that would no longer be published as a result of any policy action by this.
So data that's not published today wouldn't be subject to this policy?
That's correct, yeah.
Credit card data wouldn't be subject to this policy?
That's correct.
Right.
Or whatever, random passwords. You know, there's all sorts of information that registrars collect under any of these. But essentially what the term of reference asks us to look at is what data should be, if we remove data, how access to that data should be available. So that's what we're looking at.
So let me give an example, because I do have a question, and I'm going to ask it at the risk of we've repeatedly been reminded by the chair of the council that we are not discussing not collecting data, we are discussing not displaying data. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. I think actually, as I've looked at OPOC again, I think actually OPOC, and Ross, I'm not sure of this, I'm asking for clarification. I think OPOC actually considers not collecting some data, right? We would not collect data for the former role of administrative contact, and because that would be replaced by a single contact called an OPOC. Is that not right?
No.
Okay. So we would still collect that data, therefore that's the kind of data we're talking about. Right?
Correct.
Plus the registrant data.
Right.
We would collect administrative and technical contact data still?
So it's not in the scope of the task force to change the data that's collected. To remove data from the collection, so yes, it'll be collected. I mean, I think the council might make a decision, and I think it would not be entirely unreasonable to say not using this data for anything anymore, and so we require registrars to do it anymore, but I don't think it's within the scope of the task force to make that decision.
Council would have to make that a consensus policy, though, Jordan.
Council would have to make that a consensus
policy.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
I'm saying they might, as the council sometimes does, modify the task force.
Okay. Then I thank you. I just wanted to refresh my memory and be sure I was clear. Then I have the following comment that I just think needs exploration. And that is, in the environment where law enforcement goes to ISPs and follows a administrative procedure, a legal procedure or an administrative procedure in order to get access to non-published data, there actually has been proven to be relatively significant cost to these intermediary in dealing with large numbers of those requests. So I'm not extrapolating, I'm merely reporting a fact that I think should be taken into account and considered in relation to any of these changes. Would there be a significant cost? And if so, does a cost recovery approach need to be examined?
Right, so I didn't quite get to my answer, please. You know, so I think you're probably right. There's certainly some cost, certainly in the initial sort of contracting phase, number four. And I think we've discussed enough. I think there's two probably logical places that could come from. One is that, as we've discussed in the past, ICANN could some of the money it gets for registration that it already has and use it to help defray that cost.
Uh-huh.
I think that would, since we're talking about mostly one time, of, like, you know, periodically you have to recontract,
right,
as opposed to each individual request, you have to go through some validation procedure.
Yeah.
I think that cost might not be overwhelming. The other possibility is it could be a cost recovery basis to, you want to sign up in order to get one of these credentials, that you pay some sort of cost recovery basis.
Right. And I just wanted to be sure that we put that out and talked about it and considered it further, because I do think it's feasible that system-wide costs can be very expensive to the registrar community.
Okay, other Marilyn, did that clarification from Steve and myself help you getting closer to answering my question, which is, are there any of these proposals or a combination of them that you think most closely represent the approach to access that the BC could support?
I think generally the BC, and I'm happy to, you know, take this up with them again, I think four is probably going to come closer to, it's very hard to sell business users on, they have to develop unique procedures on a registry-by-registry basis, although the largest percentage of registrations may be held by the top 10 or top 12 registrars. There's still a very large number of registrars to consider. So I'm thinking that a more unified or framework approach is going to be more digestible to business users, which I think would bring us to considerations of four.
So Mary, let me ask you, does number three address that same concern? Because there you've got a central body essentially responsible for adjudicating disputes, but it's on a one-off basis opposed to a blanket access.
Right. And so, you know, just take the typical large multinational corporation that uses inside counsel, outside counsel, paralegals, marketing directors, enforcement team. It's hard for them to deal with one-off. And for smaller entities as business users, it's often hard for them to deal with one-off because they're sporadic about their need. Do you follow me on that?
How are they surviving today, Marilyn?
You know, complaining.
But, you know, for one thing, they have access to some data.
Right.
Just, you know.
Right. I was just going to say that. You know, they and I think let's not any of us extrapolate from our own personal viewpoint, because it's kind of like the nine blind people and the elephant. We're all trying to do our best to consider a system-wide change. But they do have access to some data today, and they are, but in considering a system-wide change.
No, I'm more asking the question in the context of the vast majority of investigations, the technical investigations that go on that are outside of the domain space, and more in the network space, where the issue is even more decentralized, where you have millions, not hundreds, of players that need to coordinate. And I'm just wondering how your average multinational organization deals with that sense of dispersion.
I'm happy to elaborate that in great detail, but it'll take up more than the rest of this call.
Yeah, Marilyn, to the extent you could perhaps, you know, write something up or, you know, just give the task force information, it might be helpful as a data point to understand how that process works.
Jordan, let me just do 1 minute on it, and I think Maggie's on the phone, isn't she?
I am.
Let me just do 1 minute on it, and then we could come back to whether this is really something that the task force is prepared to take on as a area of study. The huge number of changes that are going on in the what we call the Internet today include actually changes at the World Wide Web level and at application level. So there is a lot of change going on in how intermediaries are dealing with the problems they encounter, including being held liable for the acts of the subscriber, or for the acts, and in some countries, efforts on the part of governments to hold the intermediary responsible for infringements, et cetera. Lots of change going on in that environment. Very dynamic, particularly right now with the growth in broadband. So there's not a single tool, and there's not a single process across the companies. All of them are putting more emphasis into dealing with these kinds of problems, not less. And I can't say that that you could find a absolutely similar design, but you could find some consistency. And it depends on the range of services that a multinational provides. eBay might be a good example. If the task force actually wants to learn more about the experiences of intermediaries, we have to look at more than just at the broadband network providers, the cable companies, companies like Amazon, companies like eBay, companies like Yahoo, as well as at a Verizon and an AT&T.
Hey, thanks, Marilyn. We have a few minutes left. I'm going to ask if there's other constituencies or task force representatives that we've heard a couple of people say that they like. So I'm presuming that Ross likes his own proposal. And Avery supported that as well. And then Marilyn, I think, has said she supports number four, some sort of contractual mechanism to get reliable access to the...
I guess you could say I said I supported it.
Okay, well, that's the closest. That's the one that seems...
yes, I think that's as close as I can get.
Yeah. But in any case, we've heard some level of support for... There are other guys.
Sure, this is Maggie. I would say a combination of 2 and 4 is something that we've been discussing in the ISP, although we haven't come to final decisions on what is supportable. But I think based on our discussions, those would be the
great.
I have a question for Maggie. 2 was the issue about UDRP implications, Maggie.
Uh-huh.
The one that we said we do agree we need to explore further later.
Yes. And what is your question?
Oh, I just wanted to be sure that I understood that it was 2 because I would probably, Jordan, I would probably, if we're taking a view on this, need to include that for the BC, we would want to see the UDRP implications examined.
Right. So I haven't heard any objection to the idea that we're going
to
include some statement that we think this is an issue that should... either the registries or the NCUC?
This is David. My concern is that, again, here we are 6 years into this. It's an inexcusable length of time to solve what I regard as a relatively simple problem. And I would oppose extensive studies that will drag this proceeding out indefinitely into the future.
Sure, but so David, are there particular approaches to the access to data that you think makes sense to pursue at this point?
Yeah, I think it's time for this task force to wind up, recognize that there is no consensus on a substantial number of issues, and refer it to the ICANN board, first to the council, and ultimately to ICANN. And I'm still... As I keep saying, the paramount issue is protection of the personal privacy.
Okay, thanks. And Steve, Mike, would I be correct in assuming that since you've noted in the past your support number 4, are you looking for more something like a combination of these various topics, or not yet have an opinion?
Well, there isn't a formal IPC position yet, but I do think 4 is... has some merit, and as I said, I think there are elements of 1, for example, that could be incorporated. I think the idea of best practices and a better common understanding of how registrars will deal with these requests, not only from law enforcement but also from trademark owners and others, would be very positive.
Okay, thanks. And I'll pull the last person. Robin, does the NCUC have a view on this?
I think we would pretty much support a lot of what David has said. I don't see a lot of protection or consideration being given to the privacy rights here of Internet consumers, and that's our main concern. So I don't see many of these proposals as really dealing with that.
Well, so obviously these proposals sort of assume that some data is already been taken out of the whois. If we don't remove any data from the whois, then this whole topic becomes moot. So I guess the question is, in the scenario where some data has been removed in order to improve privacy, what's a reasonable mechanism for people to be able to get access to that data?
So NCDC hasn't taken a position on what that favored mechanism would be.
Okay, well, so we're just about out of time. So why don't it seems to me that there's some support for number one, and it seems like there's some support for number four as well. Ross, is there anything else? I think we've got in the report there actually is the document or the statement you referred to, which is a description of the some current practices. I guess is that just Tucows practice, or is that supposed to be a generalized description of best practices?
Oh, and no, it's just Tucows practices. Certainly, it's used an example of the practices employed by a large registrar. I used our own case as an example because it was closest and most successful. But I certainly wouldn't say that it's industry best practice. Because it's only representative of the actions of one company. So I want to make sure that best practices are developed as opposed to just taking that at face value.
Right. So you would assume that if number one were adopted, that it would include some further steps to develop industry best practices? Or
right. When I use the word best practice, let me be very clear what I'm talking about. I mean taking the best practices from current practice and ratifying those or instantiating those in a singular document. There are going to be things that GoDaddy does that are far superior to what I'm doing and vice versa. I want to make sure that we get those all captured in one place. What I would hesitate to endorse is some sort of a community mind of community view of developing this best practice, which is a more of a political process than a practical process.
Right. So I guess my real question is: Is there anything more to be done with regard to? Is there more work to be done? And I'll ask this of Ross and anyone else to flesh out the option number one, or do we all think that it's sufficiently developed that we can make a decision on it at this point? Ross, do you have an opinion on that?
No, I think the details that it's missing are implementation details, and I think we can deal with those after we deal with the policy issues.
Right. So you think essentially that as far as you're concerned, the policy issues are fleshed out with regards to number one?
Yes.
Okay. Does anyone disagree with that? Is there any additional work that anyone needs to see in order to make a decision with regards to number one?
Jordan.
Yeah, go ahead,
Marilyn. As long as we are caveating these statements, I think we need to be sure we're recognizing there's been no implementation exploration on any of the proposals, and just
right. I think recognizing that there's some further implementation work to be done, sort of across. I think we're recognizing that the follow-up to any of these policy recommendations will be some implementation work.
Well, some implementation examination. The first whois task force. The implementation committee sent back significant questions, and the policy recommendations were modified. So I think people just need to be realistic that it isn't, you know, there could be significant questions in an implementation review.
Duly noted. So the other thing I want to note with regards to number four, it seems like there's some support for this, but it's a little less fleshed out, I think. So what I'm going to suggest is that if there are people interested in working on fleshing this out some more, and I'd count myself amongst those willing to spend some time on this, we might spend some time offline from the main task force work and try to add a little bit more flesh to it so people can have a better understanding and we can see whether or not it seems like a good idea or not. Is there anyone else interested in working on that at all?
I'll volunteer David Barrett, and if he's not available, I'll substitute for him.
Okay. Or anyone else?
In the same spirit, I think we can pledge someone from the IPC, but I'm not sure if it's going to be me.
Okay. Well, I'll talk with you and either Marilyn or David Barrett offline, Steve, and we'll try to get that item a little bit more fleshed out. Since those seem like the two likely places where some further discussion is makes sense.
David's traveling right now. If you want to start with me, we'll copy him and see if he can pick it up, but if not, I will.
Okay.
What about Maggie?
I was afraid you'd say that.
I'm becoming more and more familiar with multinational strategy.
I'm quietly trying to pretend I'm not. I would be happy to help, although I should say very upfront that the demands on my time right now are huge. But I will certainly try to give as much input as I can. I know that within the ISCCP, Tony, Greg, and I have really talked about Liz quite a bit, and we all have our hands quite full. But between the three of us, I think we can provide some input.
Okay, great. So I will contact people offline. So we're just about out of time for this call. Our next call is, we're more than out of time for this call. Our next call is scheduled for 2 weeks from today, and I don't have yet, haven't yet put together an agenda for that call. I think at a minimum, I want to have at least some discussion around one of the other items that we've identified for further work, which is the success metrics. And I think the bulk of the time actually on our next call will probably be spent discussing constituency statements, which are due a week from today, as well as public comments, which are also closing a week from today. So just a reminder to everyone to get constituency statements in. We'll probably spend a significant amount of time on the next call discussing those, but I'd also like to get some discussion on success metrics into the next call as well.
In PDP 05, we have already undertaken an extensive review with the operational staff on implementation questions. When are we going to do that for these proposals?
I'm hoping that there will be some useful inputs to that from the constituency statements, because it's supposed to be one element of the constituency statements is supposed to be sort of operational effects.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm hoping that will be able to help spark some further discussion on that topic. But we'll set aside some time between now and the end of our work, but probably not next week.
And that would mean that Maria would need to be working with the operational staff on their availability?
And Marilyn, I think the view of the operational staff is generally that we need to have some fairly concise policy recommendations before they can really give us useful input on how they can be implemented.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we may need to finish this work fleshing out number four, see if there's any other inputs that are going to likely change the policy recommendations, which I think we can probably hopefully wrap up over our next call or two, and then perhaps we can give the staff some more concrete things to react to.
Good. Thanks.
Okay, so we'll meet again 2 weeks from today, and I'll remind people that at that point we'll start meeting on a weekly basis until the conclusion of our work, which is February 12th. And I think that will give us four consecutive weeks of meetings. But hopefully after that, we'll be wrapping up the work of the task force with the submission of our final report to the council. Although, as Marilyn notes, we never know what's going to get flung back to us at some point in the future. In any case, with that, I'll close this call and look forward to speaking with you all in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jordan.
Bye.